welcome to another edition of the Odyssey Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient mysteries and modern mysteries and metaphysical topics of the day. I have a great guest for you tonight. Her name is Judy Schumacher. She is the owner of a metaphysical store in Vancouver, Washington. It's called The Village Pearl. And she has a lot of spiritual gifts, which she will be sharing with us tonight. She is a channeler. She is able to communicate with those who have passed on to the other side. And she's an intuitive psychic. So welcome to the show, Judy Schumacher.
Thank you, Mike. Great to have the opportunity to do this.
Absolutely. You're a very spiritual person, and I'm looking forward to this dialogue tonight. So what I want to start out with is that you have the ability to talk with people who have crossed over. Why don't you tell me how this started and how it came about for you, actually?
Actually, it started as a child, but I don't think I really developed it until my 30s. And now in my 50s, I'm still fine-tuning it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the ability to just kind of pick up the energy. And I do find that some people come through in a much stronger way than others. So, you know, sometimes you get really strong spirits, and that's not who the person came to hear about or talk about, but they come through first anyway because they want to be recognized. And it's like if someone's shining all of a sudden a flashlight in the dark, it's like they just flock to that, you know, the very determined ones.
So if you're trying to communicate with your mother, say, you mean an aunt or an uncle or someone else might come through strongly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And sometimes you just have to acknowledge them. You know, let them get their message across, or they won't go.
Then you can get to who you really want to talk to,
then
right?
Then you can kind of shift down to a different vibration and try and pick up who they actually wanted to communicate with.
I see. Well, why don't you tell me some stories? I'm sure you have some people that come to your store, The Village Pearl.
Absolutely.
And have people who have passed on. And tell me about this.
One of the most interesting phenomena that has happened is that my son, who I lost a couple of years ago, whenever it's someone that has been involved with mental illness, as he dealt with in his life, it's like I have an extra helper there.
Uh-huh.
And he gives me, right away, it's like I get that information just quick. And usually I can tell instantly, and because I have gone through that, then it's a very comforting thing, I think, for another family that's going through it to know that their child is on the other side, or their son, or their brother, or uncle, or whoever. And to be able to get that help from my son and bringing that clarity through. A very good friend of the family lost their son to a very similar situation, and they all kind of came as a group together, and I was able to get validation, you know, real pretty specific things that would have meaning only to the family.
So they generally give you a fact or something that only they would know, like
a middle
name.
Yeah, absolutely. Just little details that, you know, just funny little things or anecdotes. You know, I remember one person came through and he says, tell him that I've got the dog, and it was a really ugly dog that I saw. Now, how do you tell someone that they have a really ugly dog on their side? But, you know, I've learned that if you don't say it, exactly as you get it, then they just go away.
Oh.
So it's kind of like I've told people from the beginning that I have to be very blunt sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's, I think, how they will be recognized.
I see.
And sometimes if they were ill at the end, they'll come back in the way that they were ill just to show me.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they've carried that illness with them. They're actually fine. But they'll come back saying, you know, like with their back bent over, holding their chest, or, you know, and it's like that's just validation for the people.
I see. Now,
that are here.
How soon after your son passed on did he contact you?
Probably within 2 weeks.
Wow.
Probably within 2 weeks, as soon as I could even begin to start to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And he has has definite signs, and actually I'm writing a book that has a lot of that included, but he's been able to manifest some pretty incredible things. I have a dogwood tree that we bought as a red dogwood tree. The first year he passed, there was one huge white blossom on the tree. This year, exactly half the tree was white. And he always brings white flowers. We find them after we close up the shop, and we go in the next day, and there will be a white flower laying on the carpet.
That is amazing.
And, I mean, the alarms are set. No one's called. The alarm didn't go off. My daughter one time asked for a sign, and she was at a gas station that she hadn't normally gone to. And all of a sudden, she said, I don't care what you're doing. I don't care how hard it is for you. You've got to let me know you're okay now.
Uh-huh.
Someone knocked on her car door window. She rolled it down because she had her head down. I think she'd been feeling really sad. And some man, very well dressed, reached to the window, gave her 2 dozen white roses.
Wow.
And said, "I don't know why, but I'm supposed to give these to you." And turned around and left.
Absolutely.
And we've got pictures of the roses. You know, we call them Ty's roses. And we have them dried and hanging. And it's just pretty amazing.
And I think it's because you're on a spiritual path and you're attuned to it. So you can pick up these signals when they come.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. And the more you do it, you know, the more comes. You know, it's like the more you open that door, the more can come through. So the higher you raise your vibration, the more you accept that, you know, obviously this isn't just it, then it just opens the door much wider than you could have imagined.
Now, has your son or any of these other spirits talked about what life is like on the other side, the astral plane, any descriptions? Or?
Yeah. One time I got a message that, you know, he was, and some people, it's like if they like to play cards, you'll say, you know what, they're playing cards over there. They're showing me that they're playing cards with other people that have passed on in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're on it like they're like journeying, taking trips to places that they never got to do or see before.
Right.
So
well,
it's pretty interesting, but I also get the sense that they're really learning a lot about their life condition, about life, about spirituality, and perhaps, you know, what they're doing is working on things now. I believe everything that is created here on this level of Earth is first created on the other side.
As above, so below.
Yes. And so I think that, you know, I see people tinkering with things. I see men that had more of a scientific bent that have passed over. And when the family asks what they're doing, I say, well, they're working on alternative fuel source, or they're working on, you know, solar energy, or they're working on, you know, this or that. But they show me what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that when people get inspired here on Earth, it's because it's being given to them. That's that divine inspiration, truly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So the astral plane has a lot of similarities to our Earth, probably just not with the karma boomerang that we
deal with. I think it's a little easier over there, Mike.
A little bit easier, right. It's a time of rest and study and contemplation, is my understanding.
Yes, and they do communicate with us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever we ask them to, of course, just by our thoughts, we would bring them here.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have that life on the other side, and I think it's important to know that when we lose someone, as much pain and loss as we are feeling, if we attach that to that person, it holds them back on an energy level.
Hmm, I see.
So I think we need to remember that it's about letting them have what is next for them.
Right, the next experience.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason why they passed on at that time.
Yes.
The time on Earth was done.
You know, there are no accidents. We mm-hmm. sometimes we're here for one breath, and sometimes we're here over 100 years. And
mm-hmm.
whenever it is our time, it is our time. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean we're done. It just means we transition.
I see. So tell me some other stories about some people who perhaps have come to your store for help, and maybe a bridge you were able to make.
Let me think about it.
I know there's so many.
I should have had several written down. There have been people that have come about, you know, someone suspected foul play, you know, and that they're father had been a victim of, you know, foul play within the family. And by him coming through and explaining certain situations, you know, like, you know, normally, yes, I wouldn't have gotten out of bed and sat in that chair, but I was trying to get up to go get help for some, you know, for myself.
Yes.
And I thought that, you know, and he was trying to put a shoe, and someone thought, well, you know, that just was so out of character for him. But they didn't understand. He knew something was wrong. He was trying to get up and get some help, and they were accusing another family member of foul play. And he came through loud and clear and said, no, I was trying to go for help.
Okay. So
there are some real valid things that I think help people.
Right. Some people pass on, and they need to get a few more things out.
Yeah.
Before
yeah,
they
because sometimes, you know, the family's in a mess, and they, you know, they just aren't understanding clearly what had transpired at the time of that passing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes people come through and say, you know, I did leave something for so-and-so, and it's in the drawer in the kitchen, but, it, you know, I forgot. I put it in a little tin in the back and forgot to tell anyone where it is. And sometimes there will be like a key to a safe deposit box or, you know, just real things that help the people that are here. Because they're not doing it for them. They're doing it for the people that they had to leave.
I see. Have you ever been called into an investigation or anything with the police?
I first started doing this work, before I was even doing it professionally, there was a murder in Spokane of a friend of a couple that I knew very well. I did a lot of volunteer work with her. And they were working with the Spokane police, but they also asked me questions. So we did a lot of, you know, I did a lot of meditating and kind of getting in contact with the spirit. And I told them what had happened to him because the police had not released the information yet. I told him he had been stabbed.
Uh-huh.
His body had been taken out. And then later on, they moved the body by water. Well, they told the Spokane police that they were talking to someone here that was a psychic, and, you know, of course, the police, sometimes being the police, didn't give it any credibility, and then when they did find the body, it had been stabbed, was said, and then they found that it had been moved by water, and they found it on the day that I said they would find the body.
Amazing.
But, you know, again, they didn't give any credence to that, so I was involved, but yet, only on the family level.
I see. Well, if it's meant to be, then you will be called in again, I'm sure.
I always put it out there. If someone needs me, then they'll find me.
Absolutely. You have a really good attitude about, you know, this whole gift and when it's appropriate and when it isn't.
And sometimes it's not, mm-hmm. you know. I think sometimes people get strong intuitions, but you have to respect that some people aren't ready for any information, aren't open to it, and simply just don't want it.
Yes.
And I think it's like when you are asked, then you can give it.
I see. Now,
and
what
if someone is even on the other side, you still ask in your mind. You ask permission to contact them.
Okay. Yeah.
And you'll get either a yes or a no, very strongly.
I see. But you often get a yes, I would assume.
Almost always.
Right.
Very, very seldom. Very seldom do I ever get a no. Because I think when you get into the higher realm of spirituality, even though on some levels, the person may be not as willing. When they get into the higher spiritual realm, the spirit is almost always willing.
I see. Now, tell me about earthbound spirits. Have you come across some that are perhaps trapped here?
I have been working at a house along with some other people that was referred to me, and the family has been in great, great distress. We went out and did a clearing, which included a rice blessing ceremony with the feng shui master. We did the clearing salts. We did we used our little crystal tuners. We had white candles. We did a banishment prayer saying, you know, where I step, you may not step. Because there were several entities, but one was actually picking up even the pets and throwing them. Like a little small dog.
Sounds like the movie Poltergeist.
There was a poltergeist activity, and then there was just something very nasty. It growled, and we could hear it growling at us.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a shove between my shoulder blades right at the top of the stairs. So we had to do a lot of work, and it quieted down. There's still some poltergeist activity, but in doing research on the land, we found that the land actually belonged to someone that used to build coffins and lay out people there.
Oh.
While the coffins were being
built. I thought you were
going
to say an Indian burial, but it was...
Yeah, it wasn't Indian. It was just in an older time.
Okay.
And there are records of this, and the family didn't know it because the house was probably built maybe 20 years ago, if that.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell people it's the land. You know,
I see.
It's not always the house, it's the land.
So
we took pictures of the house. My daughter took pictures, and you could actually see this big thing in the window of one of the rooms that felt really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that the even though most of that is gone now, there's a little bit of poltergeist activity. Most of it's gone now, but I do believe that the family's probably planning on selling.
Right. There's other houses out there.
Yeah, I lived in a house like that in Michigan where they had actually bulldozed a graveyard and pushed it to the back of the acreage and then built a cement block home on that site. And things would happen all the time. We had a Catholic priest come and even bless it, and it made things worse. We ended up moving.
So with this house here, were you able to communicate with these spirits and let them know they had passed on?
Yeah, we could just kind of tell. It was really interesting because they were of Scottish descent, and when further research was done, all of their neighbors were... the original castle was in Scotland, were recreated right around them.
Uh-huh.
As far as, you know, names of clans on both sides. And I think the people that had been there before had not had any manifestation because they weren't intuitive. But these were two very intuitive people and also had children where some of the poltergeist activity came in were very... the children were very, so it just brought everything just out.
Right.
It's like everything came out of the woodwork. There was even a vortex there.
Hmm.
Which was very interesting. But, you know, I will tell, you know, anyone that's listening, if you have problems, you cannot show fear. You need to be firm and just say you need to leave.
I see. Just very straightforward.
Very, no, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, I hope you leave, or please would you leave, leave.
Yes, you have to leave the space.
Leave now.
Now, let's get into clearing houses. Let's say somebody's moved into an older house, and
mm-hmm.
they suspect poltergeist activity, or they just don't feel comfortable in their space, you
mm-hmm.
know? What can they do to clear their house?
The first thing you want to do is identify which spaces are not feeling really good. Is it real? And what we do is we sell little EMF meters. They're fairly inexpensive, and they'll just like beep, 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 beep. And all of a sudden, if you hit a hot spot, usually you won't see anything unless you put it by a TV. And the EMF measures electromagnetic frequency. And, you know, in parts of this house, it would just go wild, even though there was nothing electrical there. So you can identify which parts of the house you really want to work on.
Okay.
I think, you know, we have crystal tuners that vibrate at such a high frequency that when you tap them on a quartz crystal, you start at your door counterclockwise or clockwise and go all around the room. And you let that go into the corners. The same if you were going to do sage or sweetgrass or do any kind of smudging. You start at the doorway and you make sure you go up and down all the way around in the corners.
Okay.
And it's also, you can do it just as easily as getting a clear bowl of nice water, like spring water, and taking a branch off an evergreen that's not going to crumple up real easily, and they call it casting. And you literally dip that in water and let it just kind of, you bless it and you let it go into the corners just as the sage smoke would do, or the crystal tuner.
That's a good idea, too.
Mm-hmm. And also put salt. I tell people, you know, by clearing salt, and I'm in my room right now, and I'm looking at my window where I always keep clearing salt in a little glass dish. And it just prevents stuff from coming and going through your room.
That's a good idea. That's
very easy to do. But I think the most important thing is your intent.
Okay, so whatever tool you use,
whatever
even
tool you
like
use,
a white candle or
yeah.
something, it's just what you visualize.
Yeah, candles are great. You know, candles are very symbolic. You know, salt is very symbolic. Water. You know, and I think what you know, you could use any tool that is comfortable for you to use, and that fits into your life and into your budget. But it's the intent with which you use it.
Right. Now, what about some feng shui ideas? I know that some people put a mirror facing out the front door.
Yeah, and now there are two types of mirrors, and you want to get the right one because there's concave, which means it curves in, and that's to draw in more good fortune. And there's also convex, which is curved outwards, and that is to deflect. And it's very interesting because in China they will have feng shui wars. And you'll see one person will put up a charm to deflect the energy of the building across them. That building will do something bigger, and then it's on. And then people will just kind of continue along that vein.
Okay, so if you're having poltergeist activity, you would want the mirror facing out. I mean,
getting
the energy out.
Well, you know, if you have poltergeist activity, chances are it's mostly coming from the inside of the house. And that's where more of the salt and the smudging and the intent that, you know, you can't be here.
Okay.
And that's when finding out where most of the energy is coming from. And poltergeist activity is usually associated with teenagers.
Oh, really?
Or
because of all the emotions?
Mm-hmm.
Just high emotions?
Very high emotion, lots and lots of energy. And that will actually, almost all poltergeist activities trace to that.
Really?
And even in this house, they have that going on as well as the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was the growling and the pushing and the throwing of the animals, you know. But there was a lot of poltergeist activity, TVs coming on and off, handprints on the fridge, on the soft sofa. You could see hand pushing down. You know, just a lot of things.
It sounds like you're describing the Amityville horror movie.
Well, you know, it kind of felt like that the first night we went out there, and that's why there were several of us that went, each with our own skill set. And all with the determination that, you know, this we were going to take care of this because no one deserves to live in fear.
No.
And it was amazing what happened because even in talking to this family to set things up to go out there at the right time and everything else, the phone would go dead or there'd be nothing but static. So there were, you know, it's like we were thwarted at every turn.
Yeah, they really wanted to stay there. But
they really wanted to keep us out of there, and we just said, no way. So, and it, as it happens, we were all women. And a dear friend of mine was in town visiting from Yuma, Arizona. It turns out she knew the family, and they knew her very well and hadn't seen or talked to them in many years, but she just happened to be here for those 2 days.
Well, that may not have been a coincidence.
Yeah, no, just divine intervention. Because it put them at ease knowing that who she was and that she knew them and, you know, could talk to them and knew their history. And so, we all went with our own skill set, but absolutely determined. But it was quite an ordeal to get out there.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
It took about four hours. How did you defend or shield yourself personally?
White light.
Okay.
Just the white light. And just by knowing, I just simply call on my guides and angels. And we always said a prayer of protection and held hands and used holy water before we went out. And I felt like there were five of us, and I feel like five's a very strong number. For feng shui and Chinese mythology. Four is not as good a number to use. So I think, you know, 5's a good number. 9's a magic number.
Mm-hmm. So it worked in this case.
So it really worked, you know. And we're 5 very determined women.
Right. Well, I hope that's in your book. I hope the story's in your book.
It will be. I have a feeling there's going to be more than one book because there's a lot that's happened. So.
Absolutely. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Odyssey Radio Show, and I'm talking to Judy Schumacher. Why don't you tell everybody about your store so when they visit the Northwest, they can come see you, or if you're available on a website or anything?
We are right in downtown Vancouver in the Uptown Village. The easiest way to find us is to go and look for the bakery. We're next to the bakery, which is good and bad.
Okay, well, Village Pearl and Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, so we are a New Age metaphysical store, but when we set up the store, we decided that we didn't want to just have a store. We really wanted to be a part of the community and have set up some programs there to make a difference.
Right. So, we wanted to talk a bit about opening up a New Age store and having it be successful, and because I know there's people in our audience that want to do that,
mm-hmm.
or at least a space, if not a retail store, a space.
Mm-hmm.
So what types of groups have you brought in and been successful with?
We have speakers. Of course, Mike, you know, because you're one of our regular Friday night speakers.
Right.
And we invite speakers to come once or twice a month on a Friday night, you know, at no charge. And that way people from the community or the outlying community can check out our newsletter and come into the store and get different ideas. You know, I know that you've done your video presentations, which have been wildly successful. We've had people come in and talk about feng shui, talk about acupuncture, talk about crystals. And so it's about giving people more information, just more to use.
Well, it's pretty creative because I know on the weekends you have someone coming in and doing some free demo massage. It's
yes.
really great for them.
We are absolutely blessed from 1 to 3 every Saturday. We have someone that is there and they're certified, and they are either giving free massage, reflexology, acupuncture, Reiki treatments. So there's a variety, but people come in, and it's nice to see people coming back and enjoying that program, and we call it Time for Me, because I think a lot of people that come in are women. Men also come, but I think sometimes women don't take care of themselves, or men forget to even get a massage,
mm-hmm.
and so this is a great program. That they can just come in and also check out and see which massage therapist they really like, you know, which technique they like.
So I guess your best advice then for people maybe wanting to open up a space is just bring in speakers and demos.
You know, I think the more activities you have, I think the more successful your space or your store or whatever you're creating will be.
Mm-hmm.
We've started a used book program where people donate used books. We sell them very inexpensively, and we donate the money to the Women's Employment Opportunity Fund. So everyone knows about the used book program. We're now carrying Cafe Femenino, which is a coffee project run by women in Peru, where it's certified organic, and these women are out there doing the work, and it's fair trade, so the money goes back to them, and it's also a great cup of coffee.
Right.
We also carry Best Friend, which is a blend that supports the Humane Society.
Great. These are really good ideas.
So I think the more you think on a community level,
mm-hmm.
the more successful you're going to be.
I want to mention, if mm-hmm. anyone's a practitioner out there, like a Reiki person or yoga, go ahead and contact your local
store.
Oh, please
do.
You know, come up with an idea, write a proposal, and just submit it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, most of them are pretty open.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are pretty independent stores, and just approach them directly and try to make a connection in the community.
We love it. We've opened our store up to different groups that have wanted to come in and mm-hmm. have an event. You know, it's not about just, you know, getting your cases and stocking your shelf. It's what your, you know, what your purpose in doing it is.
Right. Now, I've been to a lot of New Age stores on my DVD tour, and it's the ones that do these groups and meetings that really take off and fly and sell a lot of product, too. But I want to get into channeling now. I know that you're a channeler. Why don't you tell me how you started out channeling and kind of what it feels like, actually?
Well, you know, I think whenever I read, I channel on a very natural level. But when I channel with the intent to go deeper, I actually... It started out where I didn't really, you know where I had gone. Someone would record the information, but it would physically kind of contort my body a little bit so that it actually hurt when I came back. So well, I'm not really crazy about this part of it. So we've kind of fine-tuned it where they will come in and they will raise my hand, and I'll sit up very straight because that's how I find myself when I come back. But at least it's not as painful, and I'm becoming more aware that I'm in the background. I'm not completely gone. I'm in the background.
Okay.
So although I'm not sure what it is that they're always speaking through me, I know that they're speaking. I hear it as it comes out, but I don't have any preconceived idea of what they're going to talk about.
You talk about they. Is this a group?
I believe it's a collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. From the Pleiades? Or?
Primarily. There was a time where I channeled someone that was very scientific, and I felt that was actually interdimensional.
Okay.
And the information was so scientific, it was just really hard to grasp.
That sounds like Seth, if you read the Seth book.
I did. I think The Nature of Personal Reality is probably one of the most life-changing books that I've read. And I think that although they say it is fiction, The Education of Oversoul 7, I think there's a lot of truth in that particular piece of work by Jane Roberts. I think she, you know, she was excellent in the work that she did.
So for a while it was one scientific person, and now it's a group.
Now it's a group, and they always say they're from the area of the Pleiades. And also, you know, again, and you and I have talked about our connection to Sirius and the Dog Star.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always been very intrigued by that particular star system. So I've always known ever since I was a child that there was a connection there.
Well, just so people know, Sirius is the brightest star in the sky, and it's in the Pleiades, and there was an African tribe that was given information about Sirius and how Sirius A and B, a satellite, rotated around it. And they were given that information hundreds of years ago. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that, you know, without direct communication they would have had that knowledge.
No.
And they would know exactly when it would do, kind of wobble in its orbit or whatever.
Yeah, they had a lot of details about Sirius.
It was actually on ancient cave drawings, from what I remember.
It was in their caves, yeah. Mm-hmm. They showed pictures of UFOs landing.
Mm-hmm. So it's always very interesting to me that, and I had, before I had heard you speak about it and saw your video about 6 weeks prior to that, I had channeled all this information about Sirius in a group that I do on Thursday evenings. I teach a class, and we were practicing channeling, so that was a lot of the information for that evening. And so it was kind of validating to hear you, you know, speak about it and to watch your video with all the information in it. And it was just very validating for me.
Right. So
in the channeling.
Yeah. Is there like a general message they're giving to humanity? My feeling is that in the 1940s, after we started playing around with atomic bombs and weapons and we blew up Hiroshima, that kind of gave ETs permission to come to the planet because we were in big trouble. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I think that they are watching closely. I think we're, you know, there's a wonderful old saying, and I keep kind of hearing it from them. It's like, you know, don't be of any political alignment. You know, don't align yourself with anything where you have to be right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, choose to be kind. And peace has to start first in your heart and then in your home.
So have they given any message about when UFOs may openly be revealed, or about 2012?
I believe what I've heard is a lot of what we're seeing has been going on for quite some time. It's just that we're paying more attention. I think also that they've been, a lot of people never believed in UFOs before. I mean, the term wasn't even coined until the 40s. And now I think that it's so prevalent. It's in all the movies. It's in all the shows. It's in, it's in our culture. And I think that it's been planted there so that we won't be as afraid when they are actually able to reveal themselves.
It seems
and I
like
do believe that there are hybrids here.
Hybrids, right.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in contact with any, or do you feel that they just blend in really well?
I think they blend in really well.
Mm-hmm. Right. I get that sense, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's about, it's that they just, I think they don't want us to destroy this particular planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the message that I get. And so it's like we have to, we have to just each start with ourselves and be peaceful. And they talk about, not having judgment.
Okay.
And about the earth changes to come.
Is that in relation to 2012?
A lot about East Coast.
What are they saying?
A lot of the weather patterns and more storms. Possibly some land loss in the future on the East Coast.
Right. Well, the superstorms, we just had a huge hurricane in the Caribbean, so
mm-hmm.
there is more and more of that activity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's about earth changes, and they said earth changes have always happened,
mm-hmm.
but because we have done so much to the planet, it has become accelerated.
I see. Well, we'll be watching for that. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing all your gifts. Why don't you tell us one more time, Village Pearl, correct?
Village Pearl. We're at 19th and Main Street in downtown Vancouver. And, we also have a meditation group that meets the second Sunday of each month, which is open to anyone at 1 o'clock. And I believe this next one for September, you're following up with your video presentation.
Right. Well, if people are in the Northwest, they should go to Vancouver, Washington, and check out your store.
Absolutely.
We would love it. Thank you for joining me tonight, Judy.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
All right. She's a very nice guest and really has a lot of talented gifts as far as channeling and an intuitive psychic. And she was even helping people with poltergeists and police investigations. And I really wanted to have her on the show and share. So we have a few minutes left, and I want to read an interesting article. It's called The Serpent People, and I always talk a little bit about ancient mysteries on all of my shows. And please do go to my website. It's called fountainsofyouth.net. And when you go on there, you can see my DVDs that Judy was alluding to about ancient mysteries all around the world. I've produced two and in the process of producing my third. So it's fountainsofyouth.net, and please check out my products. There you can see a picture of me, read a bio, and find out a bit more. Thank you. So now we're going to read about, I'm going to read to you an article called The Serpent People. All over the world there are many examples of ancient people worshiping the serpent. They were very proud of it. Many legends speak of the serpent people. For instance, there were the Nagas of India and Amaru of South America, and even some of the gods of the Indus Valley, which became the Hindu culture. They were said to take either human or reptilian shape at will. So that's a reference to shape-shifting, going back and forth between human and reptile, and that's a concept that David Icke writes books about. And you can find out a lot more about that if you check out David Icke's websites or books. So the serpent people were a very intelligent race. Legends also say that these remarkable people retreated to the dens of the earth and created underground cities worldwide. It is said they have continued to make appearances to humankind on occasions. There are also many depictions of serpents in sacred sites of Teotihuacan in Mexico. The ancient Maya's feathered serpent god was Colcalcan. There are serpent depictions all over Mesoamerica, Aztec, Toltec, and Mayan sites. There is strong evidence that the Aztecs, Mayans, Toltecs, Incas, and others worshipped the same god, known under different names, like Viracocha, Kukulcan, Gucumatz, and Quetzalcoatl, of course, and even other names not mentioned here. In the Codexes, which is the Book of Legends, it is told that the Aztecs worshipped the serpent god Quetzalcoatl, who lived with the Indians 52 years and was their teacher. His beautiful name is translated as Serpent of Precious Features, Plumed Serpent, or Green-Feathered Serpent. He was tall, light-skinned, with blonde hair and a beard. Sick people used to visit him because he could cure blindness, skin diseases, and eye ailments. In the codexes, it is written, "And so greatly did they believe in the priest Quetzalcoatl, and so greatly obedient and given to the things of their God, were they, and they were so fearful of God, all believing in Quetzalcoatl when he left Tula." The benevolent serpent god Quetzalcoatl is the plumed serpent god who brought the benefits for Mexican civilization and taught the science and mathematics and astronomy to mankind. He learned He taught humans useful arts and commanded them to love and respect each other and dismiss violence. Across the world in old Mexico, the Toltecs were raising great temples in honor of their white god who inspired them. People of Mesoamerica believed Quetzalcoatl, the serpent god, will return again to rule all the planets. Quetzalcoatl, also known as the white god, was known by the Chortagans, who lived in what is now Nicaragua and northern Costa Rica, as the god Tamagastad. In the 17th century, the Popol Vuh was discovered by Father Jimenez and established the indisputable philosophy of the Mayans, who worshipped the one god as an impersonal and worshipped the messenger of the sun, Quetzalcoatl. The Mayans are still waiting for the return of Quetzalcoatl, as the Hindus are waiting for the 10th avatar of Vishnu, and Christians are awaiting the return of Jesus Christ, our Lord. In North America, serpents are deep-rooted in the native Indian cultures. The serpent symbol dominates the art of the Hokum Indians. Their site is the famous Snake Down, Arizona, which dates from 400 BC to AD 1200. We must also remember that an unknown culture left an enormous serpent-shaped mound in Ohio. The country of Haiti has many very old legends related to the serpents. The native voodoo people believe in the god Damoba Widu and his image of the serpent. Damoba Widu is the great serpent, the creator of the universe, heavens, and earth. As the voodoo tradition says, the serpent let go of the waters upon the earth, the rainbow arose, and the serpent took the rainbow. In Australia, the Aboriginal people have preserved many legends of the serpent in their dreamtime myths of the creation of our planet. In Central Australia, there are ancient drawings of the rainbow serpent. He created mountains, rivers, and people while traveling from the north coast. The spacemen, or ancient astronauts, who descended from the stars to teach mankind were known to the ancient people as the dragons or serpent people. Serpents were worshipped by the Lemurians and Atlanteans. The serpent was also a symbol of divine wisdom. Later, this worship turned into serpent cults among the native people all around the world. So it's a pretty interesting article, and it really validates a lot of the research I've done, because I've looked back at ancient documents all around the world, and the oldest ones go back to Sumeria in the Middle East, which is modern-day Iraq, and they write about these, you know, benevolent Caucasian-looking gods who had long beards and sandals and robes and taught mankind, but then they were also referred to as snakes or reptiles at times. And actually, one of the benevolent gods was, depicted as a snake in the Bible. And he was trying to help mankind, trying to show them the tree of life or the tree of knowledge. And later on, this character got demonized by the church and turned into the character of Satan and somebody to be feared. But originally, he was a benevolent teacher. So I get into it pretty deeply in my DVD, The Sands of Time, so please check that out for a full summation of the whole ancient astronaut theory. And it's at fountainsofyouth.net, or click on Odyssey from the main show. You can check out all my archives and go right to my website. So once again, David Icke came out with a book, you know, in the past 10 years talking about this shape-shifting idea. And it's a wild theory, but A lot of my research indicates that there was this type of character with the ability to shapeshift a long time ago. And even to this day in India, they have these staircases underground in their cities. And if you walk down the 30 steps or 60 steps down there, they will have these doors with snake emblems all over them. And they tell people, you know, you should never open these doors because this is the underworld and these are the caverns where the Nagas are, the snake people. And they still believe in that very firmly. And you can even go down these stairwells to this day, but I wouldn't go in. As we're winding up, I want to mention a few other things. Aaron Russo, who was a great American, he was a very well-known film producer, died this week. His most famous film is The Rose with Bette Midler, and he produced many Hollywood hits. And he was a real patriot. He recently produced a great film. It's free on the Internet, and I would love you all to see it. It's called From Freedom to Fascism. I'll say that again. It's From Freedom to Fascism. And he really looks into the IRS and the Federal Reserve and how our government is structured as far as taxation of the people and our money system. And it's an extremely enlightening and provocative film. It's been in the Google Top 100 videos for quite a long time, for several months. I usually check Google Video to see what people are watching, and it's generally in the Top 100. Millions of people have seen this film. So it's about a two-hour documentary, and Aaron, he's been a patriot for many years, advocating going back to the Constitution and a much smaller government, actually. So this was his last film, and please watch it for free on the Internet. It's, once again, it's called From Freedom to Fascism. So that was the big news this week. And I want to talk a little bit about news and television, actually. I've been just gathering my thoughts about it this week, and it occurs to me, we're not even aware of it, but we're hit with news headlines all day long, all the time. If you listen to the radio, we're thrown these 10-second or 15-second sound bites about a very complex topic, such as the war in Iraq. I mean, how can you really convey anything important in 10 or 15 seconds and then jump on to another subject, something ridiculous like Anna Nicole Smith? And they intersperse ridiculous things with hard, heavy subjects. And we're subjected to this all day long, this bombardment of news. It's like almost like throwing, you know, spaghetti at our wall or something and just throwing things at us. And so I've really tuned out of the media, to be honest with you. I've switched over to Internet radio, projects like BBS Radio, and turned off the network news. And all of these news bites and sound bites are produced by AP and the UPI and the Reuters. Well, guess what? I mean, who owns these services? You know, why hasn't anyone ever asked that? Are they impartial? Do they have a bias? Are they owned by stockholders? What's their point of view? So we've never had any real information about the Associated Press and UPI and Reuters. And quite frankly, there may very well be an agenda because so much is filtered out and we never get to hear about it. There's been massive crop circles over the past few weeks, just to give you one example. But the news media, the wires, will not pick these up, even though they are spectacular and massive. And it's an important news story. The media will not touch it. So there's definitely an agenda going on there. And sometimes people ask me, well, Mike, you know, you're very tuned in and very aware of what's going on in the world. How can we find the best news sources? And some of them are right on the main page of BBS Radio. If you click on the main website, rense.com, is a fantastic website. Jeff Rense is a former reporter for NBC who gives out the news headlines every day. DavidIke.com is fantastic. A lot of people say, well, he's going to talk about reptilian aliens all the time. That's not true. If you go to his news headlines, he very seldom brings up reptilian aliens, actually. He's kind of gotten knocked for that, but that's only maybe 5 or 10% of his work, actually. Most of it is about the New World Order, the free trade agreements, the war going on around, all the current events. So if you really want the latest cutting-edge news, I would go to davidike.com, and that's right on the BBS main page. And then Alex Jones, of course, is our bulldog reporter out there fighting for freedom and the truth, and he's also on the BBS main page, and that's at prisonplanet.com or infowars.com. So I usually go to those three every day and quickly scan them for the best articles. And the other really good one is whatreallyhappened.com. What Really Happened. They always have fascinating stories and really important information out there. So I've given you four websites, and I'll keep giving you more as the weeks go on, so you can be tuned in and aware and start, you know, I mean, the ratings for television news is way, way down. People have already begun the great shift. It was 20 years ago, everyone used to wait till 6:30 and Tom Brokaw would be on and they'd sit around the table at dinner and wait for him to tell you the news. Well, those days are gone. And the local news ratings are way, way down because they're only reporting on really fluffy entertainment things, and people have turned it off, actually. I found out here in my area, the 11 o'clock news only accounts for 15% of programming. So 85% of the people are not turning on the news at 11 like they used to. Newspaper subscriptions are way, way down in every city of the country. So people are having laptop computers and accessing, you know, quickly information that's more unfiltered, quite frankly, and finding their own sources on the Internet. So it's all shifting and changing very quickly. Even 5 years ago, I mean, I would still say that TV news dominated and newspapers dominated. I would not say that today, actually. It's the balance has shifted, and they're really going to have to change or do something quick, because people have found out that there's a lot of information that's been filtered from them. So it's going to be interesting to see. The big test right now is with Ron Paul. He won several straw polls this week for president, and he won them. Not even like second, third, or fourth place. He won them outright, and the media is not reporting this at all. They're talking about some other people as front runners, Giuliani and Mitt Romney. And Ron Paul's a real people's candidate. He's talking about downsizing government and giving our money back to us and abolishing the income tax and all sorts of freedom-invoking ideas. So this is going to be a big test this year coming up. And I noticed there's a new show called Ron Paul Radio at BBS, if you look on the main webpage. So, you know, there is a show on our network where you can tune in and get some real facts and information about Ron Paul. And it's going to be a real test if he continues his wild popularity, how the media is going to handle this, if at all. Are they just going to ignore it? Are they going to fake the polls? Are they going to change it? Are they going to stop the election? Or what are they going to do? But he's clearly a non-corporate candidate. He does not represent big business or corporate interests in any way, shape, or form. So that's the big news story, I feel, for this going into, you know, the end of 2007. And I'll wind up tonight. I'm going to start talking occasionally about books that have been really important in my life and I want to share with you. And I'm going to talk about a book tonight. In our last, you know, we have about 5 minutes left, and the book's called Serpentine. And it's going to surprise you because it's not necessarily a New Age metaphysical book. It's a nonfiction crime book. It was written around early 1980s by Tommy Thompson, who has since passed on. But Serpentine is the story, it's the true story, of a killer, a mass murderer, who went all over India and Thailand, mostly in Asia, somewhat in France. And he was kind of a chameleon. He could change his looks. He was half French and half Thai. So sometimes he looked Western, sometimes he looked Eastern. He had a tremendous amount of charisma. His name was Charles Sabraw. He was able to escape out of jails. Incredible escape stories. He even escaped from an island once in a prison. And went all over Asia mostly and operated all kinds of scams and jewelry robberies and drug running. And, you know, why am I talking about this? You know, but the thing is, it's not a book about death. It's a book about life. Because the heart of the book is these three Americans, three women, who journey to the East. And unfortunately, all three meet their karma and their destiny, and they're all killed by this Charles Sabraw, this serpentine, this snake. But they're all on metaphysical journeys, all three of these women. And one of them is kind of a hippie in early 1970s, and gets very involved in yoga and meditation and wants to go to Nepal and she finally decides to become a Buddhist monk. But one of her last days in Bangkok, she decides to party and go to nightclubs for a few more nights just to get that, you know, sensual side out of her. And she meets Charles Sabraw, and she's unfortunately killed. So right before she was about to become a Buddhist monk. So the book is about karma. The book is about destiny. And the book is about Westerners finding out about the mysteries of the East. And on a personal note, I grew up extremely traditional, the most traditional background you could ever imagine. I was a choir boy. I was an altar boy at the church. Very faithful to a very traditional form of Christianity and reading the Bible. But when I was about 12 or 13, my dad came up to me one day and he said, "Mike, I want you to read this book. It's called Serpentine." And he handed it to me, you know, a book about a killer, a mass murderer. But once again, it wasn't really a book about death. It's a book about life and how people go on spiritual adventures and the laws of destiny and karma, and how it introduced me actually to these Eastern topics. So it's a fantastic book. It was very life-changing to me because it started my metaphysical spiritual search. As I look back now, I can see it was not an accident that my dad passed this book on to me. It was meant to be. It triggered something within me and started me searching, looking to the East, looking into reincarnation, looking into Hinduism and Buddhism and some of these very foreign alien topics to me. And it took me many more years to kind of unwind from fear-based Christianity, because I grew up in a fear-based form of Christianity. I was scared of Jehovah of the Old Testament because he was a frightening, a jealous, and angry God. And I was afraid of Satan, the devil, because he had a pitchfork and would take people to hell and they would burn forever if you didn't do what they said. So I had to unwind from years and years of fear-based training and being scared, as a lot of us did. I think a lot of people can relate to what I'm saying right now, actually. So once again, the book is called Serpentine. It's by Tommy Thompson. It's a, trust me, this is an amazing book. I mean, this is a book that you're going to read in one night. It's such an incredible true story. You'd have to read it to believe it, but this is actually true. It actually happened. And please enjoy this book, Serpentine, and look into all of these mysteries of the East as these Westerners from America journey to India for mystical reasons, and they do, you know, they do meet their death at the hands of this killer, but they reach spiritual enlightenment in their own way along the way. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight. We had a great guest, Judy Schumacher, talking about the other side. And, you know, if you do have a loved one who passed on, there are people you can contact. There are intuitives and psychics who can be a bridge or a halfway person to help you communicate with a loved one who's passed on, like Judy. And Aaron Russo, once again, please watch his DVD, From Freedom to Fascism, and check out the book Serpentine by Tommy Thompson. So thanks for joining me tonight on Odyssey, and I will see you next time. Thank you. Good night.